into the New York side of things?
New York has been going well. This is a friend's place. I'm moving into.
Sweet.
I found a 1 month rental through this place called Outpost Club.
Okay.
And I'll be settling in there starting tomorrow, the first, right? That makes sense. Stay there for the month. And then I'll see what's up after the first couple weeks there. If I like that part of town, if I want to look at a different part of town, but got a place to stay for a month and I'm excited for it.
Dude, amazing. Amazing, man. Congratulations on making that move. I know it's, you know, you enjoy it at one point, but then when you move too many times, sometimes it gets a little bit dreadful, but I'm glad you're enjoying the move and you got some new energy.
That's right. That's right.
I love it. I love it. No, dude, thank you. Thank you for dropping into the podcast. I'm pumped to talk to you. I actually got to meet you in real life a few weeks ago when I was in Vegas. That was awesome just to sit down and have some coffee. And yeah, man, I think you have a lot of things going on your side. And I just want to give you the floor a little bit to tell people who you are, how you got started, and then we can kind of go from there.
That sounds perfect. How I got started. I'll start with what I'm doing now, I suppose. That's a better place to start out.
Kind of go backwards right now, a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right now, I'd say the main three projects that I work on are, obviously, I have a podcast that I've been doing for 4 years, and I can talk about the genesis of that in a moment. I have a ghostwriting business that specializes in email newsletters, usually weekly, sometimes daily. And then I also am involved with a data and analytics consulting firm. And typically, the way in which we help companies with data and analytics is reporting automation, I would say, is the specialty. There's a lot of pieces to getting your data set up, right? There's like software engineering and building web apps, and there's lots of different pieces of that puzzle. Our main thing is building data warehouses such that we can help you build data visualizations so you have an automated layer of insight into your data. Those are the three projects that I'm currently involved with. Mainly I do sales and marketing for the businesses. Obviously for the podcast, I do a little bit of everything. And then I have a team of co-founders that help with the fulfillment of all the work involved with all of the businesses.
I love it. I love it. What, which one of those do you enjoy at the moment doing the most? Is it still the podcast, or has the energy kind of shifted a little bit?
I think the podcast is structured such that it's what I almost guaranteed to enjoy the most, because there's no constraints around it besides, am I having fun? Like the businesses, they need to make money for me to consider them worthwhile. If they don't make money, those projects are failures, right? You could say nothing's really a failure. It's just like a lesson, but it's like the reason I do those things, those are businesses. It's like saying, well, I got fired from my job and I didn't fail at the job. It's like, no, you got fired because, you know, you were not a success for the job. So it's the same reason that if I'm not making money from the businesses, they're not successful pursuits. Whereas the podcast is all about, and I think you do your show for a lot of the same reasons, right? Who do I get energy from speaking with? What do I want to learn about? And if I'm getting on the phone with those people and having a good time, then that's everything it's supposed to be. But I am having a lot of fun with the writing business as well, and metrics. But metrics, I'm really not doing much day to day anymore. So maybe that's actually the most fun, because my involvement is the lightest.
That is usually how it goes. I love that. The podcast. Tell me a little bit about it, because you have a co-host, Lewis and Kyle Show, right? Tell me a little bit about how you guys got started. You mentioned like the genesis of it and what made that happen, and how has it evolved, I guess, is the biggest thing in terms of guests or content or anything like that.
Yeah, I met Kyle in a very, I guess you could say, typical sense. We were both at the same entrepreneurship competition. There was a startup weekend that our school had hosted. We went to the University of Alabama, and we met at this event and competed against each other, kind of like hackathon, but for non-technical people. I was technical, but I just also participated in this non-technical event. And we got dinner later that week and kind of just immediately hit it off and became close friends. Maybe like a year later, he had started a mastermind series with a couple of his fraternity brothers, and we were not in the same fraternity. I was the only person who got invited to this from outside of his fraternity, because I don't totally know why. And so we were hosting mastermind dinners in person with the same core group of five, and then plus an outside guest. And then when the pandemic era had begun, we had to obviously take that remote. There are five of us on campus in Alabama. All five of us went distributed to different locations. We wanted to keep the tradition going, and we wanted to record it because we basically had two or three of these conversations that were, I mean, we'd only done about two or three with guests, and they were so awesome. We just like were having these energetic conversations about them as a group, and we're like, oh, if only we'd recorded it. So that kind of had a very natural transition into the podcast. And we had a lot of time on our hands at the beginning of the pandemic, being in school with our classes at the time, switching from a graded system to a pass-fail system for that semester. So that was awfully convenient. The risk of not doing as well had been mitigated pretty dramatically. And that was the starting point. In terms of the evolution, the initial goal at the outset was really for us to meet entrepreneurs that otherwise didn't really have much of a reason to give us time. It was to have a reason to record the conversations with these people, right? Like, you're not going to record a dinner at a restaurant. That's a bit strange. But a podcast, it would be more strange if you didn't record it, obviously. So kind of the social context. And then Kyle and I had both obviously interest in entrepreneurship, right? We'd met at a startup related event the year before, and we'd tried several projects, both of us, that neither of which or none of which were ever particularly successful. And so we don't want to start any more businesses just for the sake of starting businesses. We wanted to start businesses only when we actually had a thesis that was like, okay, I've learned a lot about business and this should actually work, not just because I want it to work, but because I've identified right the right ingredients, a real problem with real demand in a growing market where the buyers have purchasing power, and like the ingredients were like, oh, that's actually probably going to work. And the podcast was just something to do with ourselves until those ideas presented themselves to us in our lives. And since then, I've started a business. I've had several jobs that the podcast was also very helpful in connecting me with the right people to get those jobs. And it's likewise helped me go deeper in the industries that I'm choosing to build businesses by building relationships with people much further ahead, much more established in the industry. So they can kind of, I mean, even yourself, right? You've been in the agency game a long time. We met through the podcast. You've given me several pieces of quite good advice of things to steer clear of and things you're glad you did in your career. And so it's countless things like that have happened that I can attribute to the podcast. So what it really comes down to now is a couple of things. What am I just genuinely like interested in? What sounds really fun for me? So someone sends me an email, like a public relations company, and they're like, I want you to interview, I'm just going to make this up, like the CEO of Vitamix. That just came to mind. Yeah. Maybe like, I'm like, dude, I love Vitamix. I want to talk to the Vitamix guy. Like, that's like the entire depth of how of the decision for interviewing that guy. Just like something in my brain is like, that sounds awesome. Let's do it. And then other times it is more deliberate. It's like, okay, who's been successful at ghostwriting before? Let me find five of those people and speak to them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, yeah, I think the podcast is one of the greatest connection tools, in my opinion, the people that I've connected with and got to talk to. And I definitely agree with all of that you just mentioned. How and if is the podcast any way helping with those businesses now? Or is that something that you guys potentially plan on doing at some point and turning, you know, that as more of like a, some sort of marketing or self-sponsorship type of avenue for those businesses that you guys are starting?
Yeah, it's not necessarily helpful in a deliberate or structured way. It is helpful incidentally. And like I said, I now prospect based on selfishly what I in my role feel most in need of. And right now, it's actually funny. I don't think I'm very knowledge constrained. There's, I'm sure, lots of like unknown unknowns, like things I don't quite know that would be helpful. But actually, I think like I've gotten enough good ideas that I haven't fully finished. Like I went to the buffet of life and business advice, and I'm still eating from that same plate. I do not need to go put more stuff on that plate to have a like a very full meal. And it's certainly helpful to like hear people yell at me and tell me the same lessons that I'm not quite fully applied yet either. Like I think it's valuable to reread a book for a lot of the same reasons. But the primary intention is building relationships and cementing knowledge in things I think would be helpful for me to prevent myself from continuing to be the bottleneck for the business, because you're almost always the bottleneck. And if you're the owner of the business, if you're not like, even if you're not the bottleneck, you are the bottleneck because it's your responsibility to figure out what you could do to grow it even more. Otherwise your growth rate would be infinity.
Yeah. And yeah. And I think that's kind of the beautiful part about when like podcasting, you know, in that sense too, like becomes the thing that you do becomes the main like thing. It just becomes this enjoyable way of connecting. And then I think it even turns the other way where you might be talking to somebody and you come up with a business idea, and then person a year down the road becomes your business partner, like something similar to what you and Kyle basically connected with. And it was at a different, you know, thing, but on the podcast side of things, I think there's a lot there. But ghostwriting, tell me a little bit about that side of the spectrum, because that also kind of funnels into the online writing and things like that. So tell me a little bit about how you guys got into that. Have you always been doing a lot of your own writing, or have you always kind of collaborated with people? What's the backstory on your sort of writing career?
I started publishing articles on the internet in 2018.
Okay.
And not super deliberately, just at first some book reviews right on a WordPress site that would get zero traffic. And then there was a period of time throughout college where I posted on Medium moderately consistently. And then I had a Substack that I still have, but I haven't published since February of 2023. So it's hard to say that with 11 months off, it's been maintained actively. Though I do use the same list I moved my podcast to be hosted on Substack as the audio hosting platform, because it automatically sends an email to all those subscribers. So I do ping that list weekly now, just with a podcast related message, but it's not necessarily a proper email. And then I don't really think I've done proper freelance writing work before launching Inbox Ghosts, but I have had a personal website where I did Ship 30 for 30 in like the third ever cohort. So maybe the second in February of 2021. So it's pretty early with participating in that. And in my senior year leading up to graduation, that was in many ways what kind of my plan was. I was like, this is how I'm going to support myself when I get out of school and need to support myself. I'm going to be a freelance copywriter. I've seen a lot of people do it, and that's what I want to do. And then kind of when I graduated, I didn't have enough urgency to need to make it work. I went and moved home, so obviously didn't have a rent payment. I was fortunate enough to go to school on a scholarship, so I didn't have any like student debt or anything like hitting me. And I did work a couple jobs and internships throughout college. So that summer I was kind of just enjoying living at home and working on the podcast. And I did write the podcast, my newsletter still at that point weekly. But outside of that, I didn't have any urgency to make the business work. And so then I decided to move to Tennessee and start paying rent and start running out of money so that I did have urgency to figure out how to start making money.
I love that.
I had so much urgency that I decided to get a job to make money in a more surefire way than yet again, just like hoping I would figure out how to start a business. And right. So I started my first job September-ish of 2021. I worked in crypto for a full year. So until, not quite a full year actually, not quite a full year, because I left my second job in crypto in like August of 2022 to start Orbit Metrics, or to join my existing co-founder with Orbit Metrics and start those businesses. And then after the first year of running Orbit Metrics, we decided to spin off Inbox Ghosts. So it's the same team that runs Inbox Ghosts, kind of as the everything I've wanted to do in business and all the lessons I learned from year one, specifically what the biggest challenges were in terms of sales and marketing. Now I felt ready to start the writing business based on like what I learned and the experience that I have accumulated, and the specific pain points that inspired me to start it with the sales and marketing process for Orbit Metrics is, you know, this, you ran a development related arm of your consulting firms. It's very hard to have standardized packages for development. You can, you know, have a standardized hourly rate, and you can say, we only work with buckets of hours. So you have to get on a 40 hour per month retainer, or an 80 hour per month retainer. But at the end of the day, it's still hyper custom work. And it's harder to build like efficiencies, because unless everyone happens to want the same app, you're probably not going to charge two people twice for the same app. You would just sell them the access to the app once you have it built. And it's also very expensive and high touch. So all of the things that made sales and marketing difficult for Orbit Metrics, I wanted a business that didn't have the same problems. So something with a more accessible entry point, a standardized fulfillment so that we can start to build processes and subcontract more easily. And then also very selfishly, like personally, it is the business that I wanted to have built. I never had the dream of building the data analytics consulting firm, but I did have kind of that dream of figuring out how to support myself with a writing related business.
Yeah. And I feel like, as you just mentioned, it kind of happened to me as well, where I went from building a team of people, we got to like 26. And then you just realize it's the best lesson is like, you realize the things that you don't like about that. And then you just go off and like, come up with a new idea, spin that off and try something that has a lot less of your need. Like you said, maybe for the first 4 to 5 to 8 months, whatever that time frame is, you build out processes, you work through that, you know, that hard labor where you have to sit there and document everything you're doing, and then just kind of compile it and make that like, this is the steps we follow for every project that comes in. I mean, I think that's beautiful. And I think you and I talked about just a different kind of AI related work that can go into it as well, is like the content and everything else that's going on into it, and make that job a lot easier than having to do absolutely everything manually. So I think that's really awesome. And do you guys use any AI related tools in Inbox Ghosts or on the Orbit Metrics side? Do you guys utilize that as a kind of part of your tech stack, or is it a little bit too early for you guys to do that?
Oh, we definitely use AI throughout the business in a lot of ways. Some of the creative uses, you know, maybe we're keeping the cards close to the chest on that, but it's definitely something that's in the business, right? We don't say AI, give me a newsletter, and then AI gives me a newsletter, right?
Of course.
It's not quite there yet, but it's, you know, you're staring at the body of the email and you're like, I just wrote an email about this. These are a few of the articles that I referenced. Some of the headlines within there, like, help me generate subject lines, right? I think from things on that level, it's quite useful. And same thing. It's like, let's say I wanted to cite an academic study that was like 3,000 words. Fortunately, that does fit now into a GPT-4. So I could just upload the PDF and say like, hey, summarize this PDF into 30 bullet points. I'm like, okay, now I have. So in terms of compressing each of the tasks involved to make them slightly more efficient, but it is not, hey, ChatGPT, my client is Shopify.com. I have to write them a newsletter, fabricate a story about XYZ here, and then it's done. So it's helpful in a lot of small ways that accumulate to saving a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And understanding how to use it and what to prompt it to get what you need out of it. So you don't have to sit there for, you know, 45 minutes trying to figure out like what you need and kind of go through these you know, so that's, I think, a really, really big piece of it.
On the data side, too, quickly, so I can give one other piece, an example I feel a bit irresponsible for not mentioning, let's say. But we do a lot of SQL, obviously. Like, so for anyone who, you know, SQL, that's like the language that you use to manipulate data and interact with a database. And sometimes you have to do something that you don't have to do very often. And you're like, how the hell do I do not remember how to do XYZ in SQL. Like, I'm trying to join this table with this table and have the data sorted in this such way. And I forget the syntax for that because it's been 3 weeks since I had to do that. And then, so you ask ChatGPT to like help you remember like little programming hacks. And that is like a massive thing.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think that we can all understand that the technology is here to stay, but I also don't think it fits into every business to use it, you know, at full throttle, basically. It's like, use it for the pieces to make more efficient workflows, you know, processes, take your brain dump of things and say, here's the things that I need laid out in this format, clean this up, you know, that kind of stuff where I feel like you are saving so much money on the, you know, hiring people, figuring out who can work the fastest and who can get that, you know, kind of that sort of virtual assistant type of work, I would say, done a lot quicker and just in a specific way. I think those are the kind of AI things that go really, really hand in hand, especially if you like messing around with that kind of stuff, which I personally do. I love just tapping into it, seeing what it can do and how it could transform things and, you know, all this other stuff. So that's really, really awesome. And what are, I don't know if you want to share or not, but what are some new things or ideas or businesses or I guess maybe even AI related stuff that you're looking into that you're just like, hey, this is something else that, you know, maybe once you get these businesses a little bit to a further point that you'll be able to kind of build on some of those additional like new technologies. Like, is there anything out there right now that's kind of simmering in that brain?
I think a lot of the image stuff is underutilized. I think a lot of the image stuff is underutilized. For, I mean, you saw it with, I'm assuming you saw it, Peter Levels on Twitter.
For business purposes, you're talking about, right? Because I think people are using it a lot more for personal stuff. But are you talking about like more business related stuff?
Are you saying like from a process perspective or from a product perspective?
Product perspective, like building something out. But are you saying it's being underutilized by, you know, like the mid journeys are being underutilized by like the users? Or are you saying the way people are using that technology is underutilized?
I think that there's lots of categories of image creation that could be productized with these technologies. Okay.
Is what I'm saying. I see. That's awesome. That's awesome.
So like just how Levels kind of made a tool to help people kind of rapidly design interior design ideas. And I don't totally know what he did besides, you know, expose an API to a web app where people obviously pay on like a per usage basis that helps them, you know, to create interior designs. But I don't know what he did to manipulate, you know, kind of guide the users to use the API in such a way that leads to better results. Because there's obviously ways with these, you know, talking to the robots. It's like, if you speak their language and you put things in parameterized the right way, you get the results that she wants. And if you don't, you don't. And so that's the point of these, most of these wrapper applications is basically helping someone who wouldn't know how to read the documentation and wouldn't know how to like adjust the parameters correctly to actually get the full power of the app towards their use case. And I just think like, you know, I'm like looking around the skyline, right? I'm like looking out the window and seeing like buildings and architecture. And like, I mean, like images are a huge part of like everything. And the fact that the, and also I haven't seen, so that's one thing I'll say. And then multimodal, meaning the fact that these same model, same interface can both understand you audibly, like it can hear you speak, so voice to text, and it can obviously just understand natural text. I mean, the point is like, we have not fully come to grips with what is possible when you have a machine capable of reasoning and thinking and reading and following instructions. And there's a lot that you have to get right to proceed through multi-step processes such that there's not cascading errors, meaning like a mistake in step one. If it like, let's say you have a 10-step workflow and the first step is you give it an image and it's supposed to understand the contents of that image and then do 10 other things based on the contents of that image. If it misinterprets the contents of that image, right, it's just going to end up, it's like the game of telephone and it's just going to end up like, you know, sending a smoothie to your house when what you actually wanted was like, not, I'm thinking about smoothies clearly. Exactly. Like you actually just wanted like to book a flight and instead it just like shipped your neighbor a smoothie. Exactly. But yeah, there's way, I think the big opportunity is people who can figure out how to narrowly confine the intended task such that the quality bar is 100%. Right. So it's like you define a workflow. And you figure out every potential thing that could go wrong and put on like not like 97 checks of just like the most common things that could go wrong. And it like brute force checks every potential error scenario such that you've delivered a nice tight workflow where you can say with confidence, right? This is why a lot of people don't use Siri regularly. Because it's like you've asked it a bunch of stuff. Like it's not because Siri's bad. It's because Apple did a poor job of framing it. They're like, this is a general assistant that can help you with anything. And I'm not saying I know how to do it better, right? But it, they set the expectation as like, this is Jarvis from Iron Man. This is your intelligent assistant. It can help you with literally everything. And then you ask it one thing and it doesn't know how to do it. And you're like, this is useless. Versus if they said instead, this app based on voice commands can help you make phone calls and send text messages and set alarms. People would probably use it all the time for those three things if it was framed in that way. So basically nail a couple of things and like actually nail them and then only sell the things that you've nailed. And then there's lots of opportunity. It's the same reason that lots of people don't, you know, why isn't ChatGPT adoption like 100%? Because people go in there with no instruction besides just like, it's useful, try it. What does that mean? Right? It's useful. Right, useful
right,
for what?
Right.
They ask it to help them with something. It doesn't do a good job of that particular task. And they declare that it's useless. And that's why everyone's still successful selling an application that just helps you do one thing. Because you're like, oh, I would need to do that thing. And hopefully if they've delivered an application that only does that thing, it actually works. And then people are like, yeah, this helps me do the thing. I need to do the thing. I'm going to keep using this.
That's,
it's just not confusing people. Failing.
It's just like take a subset of the big thing and just create something a little bit. I like that. I love that you mention that, because we do get mad, not mad. You know, you look it down and you're just like, man, you're selling this thing for, you know, X amount of dollars. And it's just like you said, a GPT wrapper. But at the same time, it's like there's a use case and people are paying for it, and that we shouldn't be mad about it. We should actually embrace that tightness of that product just to say, hey, this is your essay helper. Like, it helps you write your essays for school, for your university, or whatever else it is, and that's all it does. People would know how to approach it differently. To
it creates a frame of mind.
Exactly,
which is not useless. And again, when you think more broadly about the world and how it works, it's like, why do you go to a coffee shop? Right? It's like your desk and coffee at home are just as good, and you can play ambient music. But it's like, no, when I go to a coffee shop, I don't know, I just feel different, because it's like, it is purpose built for doing work or something.
Yep.
And same thing. Yep. It's like, exactly, why do you ever buy cooked food? Like, you can get beef from the store. It's like, well, I just want to like eat in that environment and have a break. It's like, there's a lot of psychology at play where not like reducing the world to simple pieces is sometimes a useful exercise and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah. Are you somebody that, I know you've been working out of a office for a while, and you kind of are on your own time. And I'm going to talk about a little bit about like the traveling too, but are you somebody when you're at home, or let's say you're not in a co-working space, are you pretty good at keeping yourself pretty tight with the work, or are you kind of distracted with different things? You get kind of like, you know what I mean? Like just what you mentioned about the coffee shop, you go in there and it's like your desk, your coffee, your laptop, whatever you're working there. There's just like a different energy. Are you somebody that's very, I guess what's the word, like you police yourself really well on that?
I'm gonna say no.
Or you kind of like the picking up the phone all the time type, you know what I mean, like kind of getting distracted, or you feel like I'm in this place and I just need to do the work that I came here to do?
Unfortunately, I'm very rarely the second kind. Very rarely have like, not very rarely, I need to do a better job of, I should spend 30% of my week working on my to-do list. Start meaning like,
right,
on the, like, am I sure that I'm working on the right things? Do I have these been identified such that the first action step is clear and there's a time estimate and I have buy-in? So for client work right now, that's actually been what's been my most productive, though it's like the least profitable use of my time right now. But it's easy because it's like, okay, you bought my newsletter from me. I owe you one Wednesday at noon. I've made this commitment to you. I took responsibility for it. And writing the newsletter is a very well-defined task. Like, I'm not procrastinating that work. I'm doing it all the time. And when I'm doing it, I'm not checking my phone. I'm just doing it. But everything else in my business, which is a lot more ambiguous, is like, it tends to be like, I don't write it out where it's so hyper clear. Like, I have to kind of come up with stuff. It's just more higher order, more frontal lobe, prefrontal cortex, other brain words, like work, like define who I want to target in my next, like, I'm going to do another round of cold outreach to see what other potential segments resonate to this offer. And that's non-deterministic work, or at least I haven't made it deterministic yet. Like, I should sit down again when I'm going up my plan for the week and say, okay, that's one of the tasks I need to work on. What is the definition of done for that task? And setting that before, basically anytime I try to start a task where there is not a clear definition of done, and you're trying to both come up with that at the same time you're doing the task, that's kind of like a red alert recipe for disaster. Versus I said,
you're so right.
My task, if instead the task was like, let's say yesterday, I'd already thought through, okay, my goal is just to come up with a TAM of at least 60,000 people to reach from three distinct segments, where two of them are customers I already have, right? So I'm just saying, okay, well, clearly, you know, so we just started writing a newsletter for a real estate agent.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, now I have a piece of evidence that if one real estate agent wants a newsletter, maybe several will. So I know at least one of my targeting strategies should be to sell to more real estate agents. And so two of these categories I'm reaching out to should come from existing client archetypes that I'm now generalizing. And then one of them should be like, well, maybe I just never interviewed any restaurant owners and maybe the restaurant would want one. And I just have a hypothesis. It's not based on any evidence, mm-hmm. but and so if I had written that out, then I go to actually do the task and it's like, okay, this is achievable. This is something I can do. If I just focus for the next 30 minutes, I'll probably be done. Versus instead, I have a very ambiguous task, which is like, define my ICP for the next quarter. And I'm like, yeah, that could take all day. Like I could stare at the window for 20 hours and not have the answer to that. So breaking down thought work into achievable pieces is something I don't do a great job at, which is like a cause of a lot of procrastination because the work is a lot more dreadful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like, finding something to break down that big thing into pieces that are actually achievable. I actually had somebody on the podcast recently that built that actually as an app where you say, I want to start a podcast, and it'll start to break down that like end goal into mm-hmm. small pieces that can help you achieve that. So it's called Brick.com or Join Brick or something like that. It's a really kind of a cool concept that really enjoy. And he's using like AI now to kind of help you take it a step further if you want and like come up with things. It's pretty cool. I mean, again, another task tool that I think can, you know, be utilized really well if you actually sit down and you know, do the work and kind of go through that. Now, I'm very much like you. I get that a little bit of that distraction. I've been trying to use journaling as a little bit more of like a focus point where that, mm-hmm. you know, going from that and having my headphones on, being in a zone, noise cancellation, like piece of paper, pen, and then letting that sort of flow into the next piece of work, whether that's something. I mean, the minute I open my thing, I made it a task like at the end of the day to close on all my tabs so I don't wake up to just panic of anxiety, you know, type of thing, you know what I mean? So just these little things that I think yeah, it just like hits you like a wave. You're just sitting there and you're just like, oh shit, and you automatically lose that lose that train of thought and that flow that you just kind of built up for the past like 30 minutes. So but tell me a little bit about your travels. I know that you've been kind of moving around, and I think when you and I talked, it was something enticed you about moving to New York to get that new sense of energy, you know, spark a fire under your ass a little bit. Like, tell me a little bit about kind of the journey of getting to New York, where you were at before. And I don't know if you have a favorite place so far that you've been, but I'd love to hear that as well, because you've been kind of going solo with that from what I understood last time you and I chatted.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to like go too hard into the New York pitch because I've been here for 2 weeks and I booked a place for a month. I committed to another month here, but I've not locked myself into anything more than that. So who knows? Like I plan to stay here for a while, but a while is also like subjective. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know your lag time on publishing, but it's entirely possible that you publish this and I'm like already somewhere else. So that's not to say I'm not liking it. That's just to say I could get a phone call from someone who's like, dude, I'm going to be like, two of my friends are going to Peru for all of March. And I'm just like, I don't have a reason to not be there with them. Really? I'm just like, you know what I mean? And New York. It's just like, I'm like, I could go to Peru for March. It's probably better weather in March. Then I could come back here in May. Like who, you know? I'm going to preface with that. And so maybe that was revealing into like the attitude I've had about travel.
I appreciate that from all angles, the spontaneity angle, and also just like the, hey, I don't know what the fuck is going to kind of happen type of thing. So I appreciate
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And I think that back to kind of like structure and some of these other things we were discussing, like it's the, you know, the term like alignment and like, and I mean, astronomy, right? The idea of like the stars aligning. I kind of think of like that metaphor. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have a lot of things aligned for certain things to be successful. And if things are out of alignment, they're not successful. And I very much see the world that way. Like, for example, if you listen to Alex Hormozi, like he gives a lot of the reason that a lot of his motivation was, right, he tells a story of like his dad didn't believe in him. His dad never wanted him to quit his job. His dad wanted him to stay on the traditional path. And so he had this like mm-hmm. very burning desire to be an entrepreneur because like he was so motivated to prove his dad wrong that like, and was so afraid of the idea of his dad saying, I told you so. And so Alex Hormozi is someone who's just like hates on morning routines. He's like, morning routines are so dumb. You just get up and get to work. And I'm like, that's not necessarily true for everyone. Because for me,
right,
I don't have that good of a motivation for being an entrepreneur, right? Like, I don't feel like I don't have another option. A lot of like, I definitely feel sometimes I'm like, I could just go be a software engineer and like, I'd make fine money. Like, I don't need that expensive of a lifestyle, and software engineers make good money. And I like writing code. And like, I didn't really like, I feel like I've been successful as an entrepreneur. Like, I could be obviously more successful. And I could make more money. And, but it's like, I've kind of proven that I can do it, and I know it's going to work out for me. And I'm kind of just doing this because I want to. It's like, for me, a right. morning routine where I'm like reminding myself of my why is kind of like helpful. Cause it's like, this is voluntary suffering. Same. and I could end it. Cause like, I don't hate job. Like, this is also like, I really decided I want to be an entrepreneur like before the pandemic. So when remote work was a lot harder to come by, but now it's like, mm-hmm. I've seen the lifestyle of a lot of remote software engineers. I'm like, that could be really rad. Like, I don't have to worry about these things. I have to worry about as a business owner. Like, I see mm-hmm. a lot of advantages to it. So for me, I actually do have to spend time periodically realigning my motivations to remind myself why it's worth it. For someone like Alex, there was no option. And so,
yeah,
like, I think
yeah,
that's,
I see. It's like, it comes from a completely different angle than you do from
exactly.
so many different perspectives.
Exactly. Like, I don't have this like fear of my relationship with my parents crumbling if I don't make it as an entrepreneur.
Right.
But, and
right.
so, but like, if I did, I probably could wake up out of bed every day at 4 a.m. and just start grinding, because it's like, I have that core motivation. So all that to say, separate scenario, separate alignment analysis. When I was traveling, sorry, when I graduated college, I was traveling. I didn't have any expenses really. And so I was not properly aligned to be successful as an entrepreneur, right? Because it was like, I didn't need to make the money. I didn't have a specific idea. I was motivated to get out into the world. I just kind of had a loose intention. And who's tried to start a business knows that if that's like your mindset, you're probably not going to be successful, because like, it's the second it gets difficult, you're just like, this sucks and I don't need to make it work. And when you're traveling, it's just like your motivation is to travel. And so I'd have a really hard time getting any work done on the road. Whereas now I'm firmly established in my business. I have obligations, right? I have clients. I have projects that I am personally responsible for delivering. And so it's very easy for me to focus now on the road, because it's like, I don't care where I am. Like, I got to get this done. Like, I made a promise to this guy. I like this guy. I like having a good reputation. I got to get this done. And so there's like absolutely no difficulty whatsoever for me to like post. I think kind of a heuristic for this is the more obsessive you are about how comfortable your work setup is, the more fragile your commitments or motivations are to what you're doing, right? So whenever I like when I had a job, I was like, I can't get work done because I'm not comfortable. It's like, that's not quite the case. It's like, if my desk wasn't at the right height, my arms were like this and they should be like this, and my shoulders hurt and that just bothers me, I can't get anything done. It's like, no, I just like, okay, I'm not that motivated to do the work. Cause now it's like, I've been cranking on airplanes. Cause it's like, I gotta get this done, man.
Confined into that time frame
and
you're like,
exactly. It's like, I couldn't be in a less comfortable position, and I've had no problem focusing. It's not about the setup. It's about the setup in your mind. That sounded like hilarious. It's true. So like, there was a time in Scottsdale again where I was again, just like obsessed with how many monitors I had and the angle and the chair and the desk and the coffee and the water. It's like, no, I just,
all the nonsense.
It's all properly nonsense. And so now it's like, I can be in the least distracting work environment, as long as the only thing that actually matters is like internet connectivity and internet speed. But as long as that's the case, I'm confident enough in my commitment and need to get the work done that I could be in Peru and still will work as much as if I was living at my parents' house with literally nothing to do except work. So all that to say, you know, I've had a lot of good bagels since I've been in New York. Rants aside, I've had a lot of good bagels.
No, that's. I'm so glad you went off on that tangent, because I think it triggered something. Thinking about all the, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but like all of the travel stuff that you're doing right now. But like, I think about time confinement from a social media perspective as well. Is like, we are so quick to click on 15 different things and do 15, like I said, even just the tabs and all this other stuff. It's like, that time confinement and almost setting yourself a timer in 15, 30 minute spurts to say, you know, don't look at your phone until you feel that like vibration go off and you're just like, okay, now I could do the next thing or I can continue that. Like, I think there's something really to that in the time that we live in now, because I think everyone is just completely consumed by others and what others are doing and comparing themselves, and they're not putting enough of that time into the things that they can actually be doing. And I do feel like, especially when you're just getting started as an entrepreneur, it's very hard to do that because you're constantly trying to learn new things, do new things, and understand and read and research. And like, there's so many layers to it. But I guarantee that if you just were to confine yourself to like spending 30 minutes to an hour of uninterrupted kind of like, I need to get this done. Don't knock on my door. Don't do anything. Like, I need to get this done. And you confine yourself to that time, you'd get a lot more effective work done. And your brain would start to think differently. Like, you would fall into that natural flow where you can start extending that to an hour and a half, 2 hours very, very quickly. And I think, I'm so glad you touched on that, because it is a mental set. And I know when I travel, when I was in Vegas, it was like so easy for me to be like, these are the three things I need to get done. I could pull up literally anywhere. But sometimes when I'm at home and like my dog is in here and like there's these little like things that happen, then all of a sudden you start to like pull that away from, you know, the actual stuff that you need to be confined to. So I'm glad you touched on that. That was a good rant and tangent to go off, in my opinion. But yeah, tell me about some of the other spots where you've lived and what you enjoyed about them, and what kind of like drew you out of there, I guess, is like you said, you went to Tennessee, you did a bunch of stuff. Like, what's some other spots that you've been to that, you know, you either enjoyed or you're just like, ah, this is just not the place for me.
Yeah, I have for the most part enjoyed everywhere that I've been. There's just certain draws to certain places, again, at different times in my life. I went to school in Alabama. Alabama's great. Tuscaloosa's okay. A great little town. I had a good time. I don't have a bad thing to say about Tuscaloosa. And then I graduated. I moved to Las Vegas for the summer, lived with my parents. And then I went to Nashville, Tennessee. And then the reason that I moved out of Nashville is because the job that I got next was based in Miami. And I was working for Pomp and big crypto person. And he had an in-person office for the company that was the same space as the studio. So, right, he has a lot of very cool guests on his show. And they would just come
in
and
blew up on Twitter. He blew up on Twitter, man. It's crazy.
Exactly. And all these like really cool people would come into the office every day to go on a show, and they would obviously like hang out and just chat. So it was like a really cool, I was like, I need to be there to like have the opportunity to meet all these people who I wouldn't have any opportunity to meet otherwise. And again, working with Pomp, he's someone I think is like very successful and someone I admire in a lot of ways. And you know, I get to just organically, you know, we're going to naturally spend more time together if I'm in the office. He's going to be like, anyone want to go get coffee? And then you take a walk together, right? Like very basic things that I wouldn't have the opportunity to build that personal relationship with if I was remote. Because otherwise our relationship would just be like about business, for example. So I moved to Miami. I drove my car from Tennessee to Miami. But by the time that I had got there, they actually like didn't have the office totally open and operational yet. Actually, that's not quite true. So he like was running several businesses at the time. The point is, I didn't really have any reason to be there. Like, yes, because Pomp wasn't running that company. There was a different CEO and he wasn't there yet. He was still moving cross country at the time. And I just like didn't, that was, well, actually what had happened was there's someone who was supposed to lend me an apartment. And then that kind of fell through at the last minute. And so I was like, I don't have enough of a reason to be here to like want to live by myself and pay Miami prices based on how much I was making at the time. And I was like, I'll just come back in a couple months. And I think I had some other stuff I want to do on the West Coast. So I end up back in Las Vegas at my parents' house again for a little while. And that was probably like February of 2022. And I ended up just living at home and traveling super frequently. So like I had friends who lived on the beach in California. I had friends like who lived in various, like all over. Like I had a friend in DC. I had a cousin in Ohio. I had a friend in Atlanta. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. So I just spent like a week working remotely in various parts of the country and then kind of always returning home as like home base. And then
I love that
around. Yeah, it was great. And again, I felt I was able to do that because I did have a job, right? Where I had like obligations to meet. Like if I didn't put in a certain level of work, they would have let me go, which is how it should be. And that's how I was able to focus just fine. And then that's around the end of that summer is when my business partner from Orbit Metrics was like, hey, like this is starting to heat up. What would your interest be in joining me? And that's when I had decided to do that. And so then I moved to Scottsdale to live with him and like just scrappy, get that off the ground such that he was motivated to quit his job as well to also go full-time on it. Nice. And that was September of 2022. And then we lived together for a while. Then he moved out to move in with his girlfriend. And so then I was like, all right, at least it's up. I kind of moved to Arizona to live with you and build this business. And we've built it to the point where you're self-employed by the business as well. And you live with your girlfriend now. And like, I don't have a reason to be in Arizona anymore. So then I went to Mexico City. So I drove my car from Scottsdale to Nevada. And I left my car and I put all my stuff in storage in Arizona. And I went to Mexico City on a one-way flight. And then I got super sick, lots of food poisoning, which was, you know, eventful. And then at the same time, we had hired a full-time software engineer at our business. And that was honestly something we could not have afforded. Like we expected a couple deals to come through and increase MRR. And then the deals didn't come through. And then also the engineer wasn't quite as good as, He didn't have the specific skill set we needed. He was a fine engineer, but he didn't have like the niche expertise that we thought he needed. And we lost like several clients. So like he started, deals didn't go through and we lost significant amount of MRR. And so basically the bank account was like racing towards zero. And I was like in Mexico with food poisoning. And
oh, shit.
So basically I just like kind of panicked and came back to Arizona and stayed with a friend for like a week to like help my business partner solve the problems together. And we had basically, and things were looking quite bleak for like the month of September. And we call it the September scramble in retrospect. And I was like, this is too stressful for me to like rent out an Airbnb. They're all expensive. I don't like want any of this. So I just signed like another 12-month lease in Arizona just like 5 months ago. And then I got that lease and then we decided to rent an office together so we could work together. Like that's what you were hinting at earlier. So then like September through December, we had an office space in Arizona that I could bike to from my new apartment and it was great. And then in December, like 15th, I was at home for Hanukkah and a friend called me. He's like, I'm moving to New York City next month, blah, 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 blah. We're just catching up casually. And I was like, that sounds really fun. I kind of want to go with you. And so I just like called my current new roommate in Arizona who I just moved in with in September. And was like, dude, I really want to move to New York. And he's like, sure. And like, he was living with his girlfriend and I don't know if they like want, they're kind of okay to have the place to themselves. So he's like, I'm fine taking over the whole place. Just go for it. I don't care. So I didn't have to find a sublease or anything. That was like super painless. And our office lease for the company had pretty much ended. So that was pretty much done. And so I just packed up Christmas Day, drove back to Vegas, just gave him all the furniture. I was like, you got me out of my lease. Like, keep all the stuff. Like, it's helpful. And I didn't really give him that much. It was just like a bookshelf and a desk. And then I moved to Vegas for 3 weeks. Then I came here, stayed with a family friend. This is where I currently am. And then I'm getting a one-month place in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, starting tomorrow. And I can get to like the motivations for why I'm here, I suppose, but just had that appeal, man. The New York energy. Just like to be social, like to have large groups, like the running groups on Twitter. Got a lot of FOMO seeing all these like fun running groups. Like in Arizona, I could not find anyone to run with. Like I didn't look that hard. But then like my second day here, I show up to this group run and it's like 60 people and they're all cool and friendly. And I'm like, that would have taken a really long time to build in Arizona. And that there's like 10 of those every day here.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That is sometimes that's all the motivation you need is just to feel that different energy. And even like you said, if you're not there for the long term, it's just like almost getting like a little bit of that recharge that you needed and that you were looking for and just kind of moving to the next thing. Now that's really awesome. And man, what a cool way to, you know, kind of build everything as you're going to these different places and coming to Arizona to be with you. That's a really, really cool backstory. And I think that's really inspiring because I think sometimes people just kind of fall short to just like get confined and comfortable in like one place. And I think that that says a lot in terms of how you're just approaching different things and, you know, enjoying your freedom that you have now, because who knows what can happen. And, you know, however long you get, you know, married, you have a relationship, you need to be kind of more in one place or whatever that might be. So I give you a lot of props for that, dude.
I definitely realize that like this freedom is short-lived, like it's not indefinite. And like I do plan to like accumulate commitments that make it less difficult to do. So I kind of feel mm-hmm. like I'm going to use it while I can, because yeah, I don't expect absolutely. To have it forever.
Exactly. Well, at the same time, like you've done enough, you've done enough work now to understand how to build a business that doesn't require so much of your attention. So listen, at the end of the day, if you know how to have that skill set and you know how to approach that, I think you can continue having as much of the freedom as you allow yourself until you, like you said, you start accumulating commitments that you actually choose to. And then you can be like, okay, my time's a little bit more confined to one space. But that's really, really dope, dude. And I know that you gotta probably run in a little bit. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of chat about? Anything that you got coming up? You guys are doing on YouTube stuff and all that. Like anything else you want to touch on?
It's a good question. I was you got me thinking about a lot of fun things. I definitely think a lot about the alignment. Like that's the big thing. That like how do I. You could reverse engineer in two ways, right? What causes me to be unsuccessful, as we've discussed? So I think, and this is something that even Dickie Bush talks about a lot. He's like, don't aim to write and edit in the same session. Don't try to do that. Don't try to come up with your topic and then write and then edit in the same session. That is a formula for failure, because it's just like, that's why people have writer's block. Versus if all you're going to do is in this session, I'm going to come up with 10 ideas and skeleton a couple potential blog posts based on that. And then you go to write and you already have an outline. And it's like, oh, I'm just filling out this outline. And then you go to edit and you're like, oh, I'm just editing. Like very easy.
Right.
So I like that type of thinking is like, what are the core things that are important to me to do? And what is the way in ways when they're structured in certain ways, mm-hmm. I'm successful. And other times I'm failed. Like I'm not successful. Why does that happen? Like why?
Almost like a log of those things, a log of those situations where you can kind of see when I do this, it's not exactly. successful.
Start
when
seeing the patterns everywhere across your life. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. You were telling me that you decided to restructure this podcast to be, you didn't like the feeling of needing to do it forever, right? But you mm-hmm. like, you know what? I'm excited about it again. I'm going to do another batch of 10 episodes. So that is something mm-hmm. you've done at the outset. To structure the situation with your motivations and your commitment and your effort level on the tasks such that it feels good, such that like you're going to do it. Yeah. You're not going to be dreadful about doing it, but it's still enough to be meaningful and be worthwhile, but it's not for the rest. Like you had to kind of put the puzzle together in such a way that it would work. But if you had decided mm-hmm. I'm going to do an episode every week for the rest of the year, that might've scared you. That might've felt limiting, right? That might've not scared you in terms of like, it's too difficult, but like you might have felt hesitant mentally. To make that commitment. Exactly. Because you're like, well, I don't know if I'm going to want to be doing it by the end of the year. But I can like, so I think a lot about that, both on like I said, commitments. Those exactly. It's micro commitments. And then in the abstract, it's just the meta pattern of like setting yourself up for success in the things that you do. And it's the same thing where it's just like, I don't want to just say like all of this is maybe just a rant about SMART goals, like the idea of like successful, measurable, achievable, results oriented, time bound. Mm-hmm. But like, I suppose that is also like not the case. But the more often right. that you do that, I would also just include like, again, you have to have a why involved. The why has to be sufficiently good, sufficiently strong in proportion to the difficulty. So like, I don't think you have to bend over backwards to produce 10 podcast episodes over like a small time period. So like you're just like, because it sounds fun. Like it sounds fun right. and I want to connect with people. That is a strong enough why to do something of this level of difficulty. But if it was like, absolutely. I need to do 1,000, right? You need to have a stronger why to commit to that. So it's like, for me, like to wake up at 5 a.m. and start a work day, I'm not going to do that on a day where I don't feel like I need to, because it just sucks too much. But if I like mm-hmm. have an urgent deadline for a client that like, if we lose, the business is hurt, like, I'm going to jump out of bed and be go. It's like,
yeah,
all the things that are important to me, how do I set them up either with my motivations being hyper clear? Again, maybe I have to arbitrarily, if there's not good enough motivation, maybe I need to arbitrarily reward myself. Like I'll give a friend $500.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And say like, give me this $500 back when I X, Y, and Z. And the same thing with like your fitness goals. Right. And like, so the $7,500 I'm doing touch that on right that. Now. Yeah.
I was about to ask you about, because you talked about routines earlier and like the whole Hormozi comparison, which I absolutely love that you touched on that, because I definitely have that thought as well as like the circumstances. But tell me about a little bit, kind of the alignment in the morning with the morning routine you're doing. You said 75 hard. I kind of explain what that is for people that don't know, but like, I think that's definitely part of the daily alignment. And I know that is, at least for me, I can speak for myself, is like doing hard things in the morning and getting myself to be to the point where, oh, I've already feel like I've accomplished the hardest thing. This is going to be easy. And that mindset gives me flow, gives me room to breathe. It gives me room to be creative. So I'd love to hear what your morning routine is around that too.
Yeah, 75 hard, I'm not necessarily doing any part of it in the morning. I have not had a routine since I've been here. If a routine means doing the same things at the same time of day, I've not had one whatsoever. Besides that, like, my day starts by waking up, right? Like, duh.
Right.
That is like the most, that's about like the level. And I brush my teeth at some point, usually in the morning,
right,
after, once I've decided that I'm done drinking coffee is usually when I brush my teeth. Anyway, personal details. 75 hard is a program that, again, for whatever reason, works really well for me. It may not work really well for other people, but that's why I love it, is that it works well for me because I like the challenge of it. There's like a feeling of accomplishment. I always have done it with friends who are doing it with me. So there's accountability built into it. And that's another ingredient for success sometimes. As far as the components of it, and I like that it demands perfection. I like that it's binary, meaning it's hyper clear. Like, there's no ambiguity about doing it. So the six things that are required every day, you have to do two workouts. One of them has to be outside. They both need to be at least 45 minutes and they're not supposed to be consecutive. There's a little bit of ambiguity about what consecutive means. But basically, like, you can't walk to the gym, work out, and walk home and call that the workout. But sometimes it's like, okay, you work out, you eat breakfast, maybe take a meeting, take another workout. Like, it doesn't have to be morning and night or something, for example. Just somewhat non-consecutive. And then you have to set your own parameters for diet and then follow those parameters. No cheat meals, no drinking alcohol, take a progress picture, drink a gallon of water, and then read 10 pages of nonfiction. And
okay,
then you have to do all those things every day, no days off, consecutively for 75 days. And if you, you know, make any mistakes or screw up, you start over at day zero. And I just like the zero compromises, pass fail mentality is just easy for me. I feel accomplished. It's great to go outside every day. There's days when it's like I've really hurt my feet like a couple of weeks ago. Like, they're not better yet. Not a big deal, but like, I just like got big bruises on the back of both my feet. And like, I just can't wear closed-toed shoes right now. Like, all of my shoes just hurt to wear. And like, it was raining outside in New York and it was like 30 degrees. I'm like, I don't care. I'm just going to go for a walk in the rain in Birks and socks. Cause like, every other pair of shoes hurt. It's just like, that's my choice. Like, fail this challenge and start over, or just like go take a walk for 45 minutes in socks in the rain, in the cold. It's like, oh, well,
I love that.
And that's just like, feels great to do. Like, after and during, because you're just like, you're feeling that sense of commitment. So then the conversation I had with my business partner this week is like, I'm able to do shit that sucks when it's structured in the parameters of 75 hard. Like, whatever the circumstances are, the alignment of the variables, it works for me. So like, how do we come up with what if I executed every single day perfectly would almost guarantee very good outcomes in the business? And like, why don't we build that same scorecard for work? And how do we get myself to psychologically buy into it with the same level of conviction, such that like, when I had a flight to New York, I knew I had to do two workouts and I knew one of them had to be outside and I knew I was going to be like lose 10 hours of my day to travel, that I woke up and got on the Peloton at 4 a.m. Right? Like, that takes a lot of motivation, but that was easy. But like, I would never do that if I didn't have the parameters of the challenge. And like, there's, how do I get myself waking up at 4 a.m. to do the proactive, most important business work? I have to structure it so it feels essential. Like, I have to, has to make sense in my head. And so that's kind of what I'm working on now, is like aligning the circumstances, the motivation, the mentality, the mindset, the why around preparing myself to absolutely crush consistent execution the same way that I'll go for a walk in the, like, there are things that are so much easier that I procrastinate for work because I don't have that same level of necessity, urgency. What happens if I fail? I can always push that off to tomorrow. There is no pushing off the workout to tomorrow because of the weather. You fail the challenge. And I don't know, but I've bought into it. And so now I'm doing it. And so how do I make something for the other things I need to do to match the same level? It works for me. How do I make other stuff work for me that is like less arbitrary?
Dude, I absolutely love that. And I, like, that whole pattern of that commitment, I'm literally, as you're talking, I'm thinking about how the hell do you take that and you apply it to just like the work and like the
why does Shift 30 for 30 work? right? Like, for some reason, it works.
I mean, I don't know if you know the backstory, but that's how I got into writing online, is because I needed that confinement of just ship 30 pieces. Like, it wasn't anything great. I even was telling somebody else
on our own, just write every day for 30 days. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But this guy Dickie tells me to, and he says to take a screenshot of it, and it's specific enough and it's easy enough, but it's hard enough. And I managed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, how do I copy that, but do it for something less random?
Exactly. Do it for yourself. So nobody, it doesn't have to be this public facing thing. It's just more so like, this is accountability for myself. And this is what I'm doing. 75 minutes of straight, like, you know, doing this thing or these three things or whatever that might be. Yeah. It's an amazing process, but I think that, I think in order to even keep, that's the, you know, the practice, I think, is every day is just like, it's like yoga. You never beat yoga. You're always practicing just to do a little bit better.
You never beat yoga. Exactly.
You never beat yoga, you know? And I think that that to me is always like something I keep in mind, because I do it pretty much on like a daily basis in one way or another. And so for me, it's just this thing of like, how do I, because I think there's like a prerequisite almost to get to that point where you can be in that space of, hey, for 75 minutes, I have to do this this is what I have to do throughout the day, those things. I think you need to have that, you need to build that consistency ahead of time, because if you, like you said earlier, it's like, oh, I'm going to record 1,000 episodes. That's a little bit too overwhelming for people. Like, you need to start small. And I think you have to have that consistency with something. You can say, hey, I'm consistent every day at fucking opening my phone and going on Instagram and recording a video. Now, how do I transfer that over to something a little bit more productive that actually, like my friend Pia said it perfect, she goes, something that makes your heart beat a little bit differently. And it's like, what is that thing? Is it your work that gets you excited? Is it writing? Is it this? And start transferring that consistency. And I think in order to get to that point, I mean, every day I am just trying to, you know, like my morning routine as consistent as it can be. And then once that's done, it's like, it starts to get a little bit more fragmented and there's not so much of it. And I think like just adding enough things in your day to have some sort of routine, but not bind it to the fact that if you don't do it, for example, you know, if you say like, I'm going to record 1,000 episodes, you miss one, it doesn't break the entire chain. You're just like, I just got to get back on that horse, and having that mental psychology to be able to do that to yourself. Cause let's talk about ship 30 for a second. It's like, don't miss twice, right? Like that was the whole thing. It's like, you can miss once, you can, but don't miss twice. Like that's when you start getting the second, third and fourth day and stuff like that. So there's gotta be always a little bit of a balance. And I feel like it's awesome to hear you talk about this, because I think about this a lot. And in times other than having a conversation like this, it's kind of hard to relay that to other people. You almost have to have somebody like, you have a consistent thing that you're doing. I have a consistent thing. Like we're kind of have a similar frequency, but if somebody's not consistent with anything and somebody is really consistent, it's going to be very hard to find that like balance and understanding each other. And what you're saying is just like really, really clicks with me, because I notice I'm aware of my ADHD and the things that I, you know, tangent off into with my mind. And I start thinking about one thing, I'm listening to a song, it's something else comes to mind, I stop that, I start this, and there's this like constant thing. And I think there's just something to what you're saying that's really impactful from just like a psychological perspective.
Yeah. I'll make like one more point on this and then we can wrap it up. Like our engineer, and he's one of our co-founders. So it's like, again, I define people by like their role, but it's like, we're all equal co-founders, but we call him our engineer, right? He's the main engineer on the team for building like a lot of our internal tools. Like he tries to not work on anything the day he comes up with the idea. He tries to like he kind of purposefully disenfranchises himself because of like, you could call it ADHD like behaviors. It's like he knows his own behavior where he's going to get excited about something that isn't actually the most important thing, but because he had the idea and he's excited about it, with the ADHD type behaviors, you think it's the most important thing in the world. So then you start working on it ahead of what's actually the most important thing. So he's like, guys, like he proactively helps us manage, like we're not in charge of managing him. We're co-founders, but it's like, we want to work better together. Like we all, like my, like I don't have a systems orientation right away. And so my business partner, who's not in charge of managing me, but kind of is, like he wants me to be successful, is like, yells at me all the time for like not building systems, and it's annoying, but then the next day I'm glad he did. Right. I'm very glad he did.
Yep.
And same thing. Yep. It's like, Ethan, you know, you're on one of your tangents where you're building something that feels cool because you just had the idea, but we don't actually need it. And so it's like he set up the rule for himself. This was his idea that like he can't work on anything without our like any code stuff without our approval. It's like obviously mm-hmm. we don't need to micromanage him like that, but it's like it actually is helpful. And so I think like some of this people might be listening to this and like it's kind of seeing yourself in a childish way. Like I think that with this marketing work, I really shouldn't be able to like start my week without showing my to-do list to the rest of my team and getting their buy-in the same way. They're like, Lewis, I don't think you understand the task of write out the ICP well enough where you're going to be, I don't think you're going to succeed at that. I know you, I know that that's not clear enough. I don't know what it is like, what completing that looks like. You probably like don't start any work, like go define that, flesh it out, then come back. Mm-hmm. And like, it's going to be annoying every single time they say that to me. Like I'm going to hate it so much, but like, I also would rather be successful and have friction than like fail and like have not had the friction. So getting past ourselves, man, getting out of our own way.
I know.
And sometimes you have to purposely disenfranchise yourself and purposely tell people to do things you don't like such that you get out of your own way.
Yeah. Do you, I love that. Do you have any, just for people listening, because I know everyone's always like, do you have any like tools or task managers, task list things that you use religiously to get like yourself at least to a point where you can kind of focus on something a little bit more confined? Like, is there like a little system around that? I know you're not big of a systems guy, but is there anything around that that you feel like this thing really helped me, like really gets me kicked off in the middle of the day? Like I need to get this task list. I need to knock these things out. Or is it just kind of like, hey, like whatever I can get to at that moment?
Yeah, I'm trying to gamify it. We do sprints. We do agile, even for non-technical mm-hmm. work. So that is a proven methodology for like breaking down large projects into epics, which are like, you know, groups of like thematically grouped topics related to a thing. So like, let's say you're building an application, right? An epic might be like, you know, the authentication system, the user interface, the database. Yep. Those might be three different epics. Then user stories are the subcomponents of the epic, which are completable. Then user stories mm-hmm. have the definition of done and the success criteria. So the system is just like have a backlog, which is the list of epics, and then have it be groomed, meaning like the next 2 to 3 weeks worth of potential work are defined with a time estimate and that definition of done and that success criteria, and then have a weekly sprint meeting where the rest of, these are the user stories I'm going to complete this week. I'm going to put them in this list as having approved of that, and then just like only work on those things. So that's like the system is like adopted the proven methodology of doing things. It's like saying right, like if you're going to start a country from scratch, right? Like you'd probably be wise to like study like government. Like you're not going to like come up with like the social coordination mechanisms on your own. Like you might want to like, like, you know, the US, like, okay, it's not perfect, right? It's not perfect, but like they did manage to stay alive for like 300 years and like, civil war and external wars and Great Depression and like all these bad things happen, but it still works kind of like there might be something to learn from that. So it's like same thing with like anything. It's just like, okay, big companies have tackled bigger projects, coordinating 1,000 people. Like, you know, they weren't perfectly on time, but like, you know, there's probably like proven systems, proven methodologies, just adopt them. So I didn't invent agile. Yeah. I was just like, people figured out how to get work done.
And it works for you. And it like, it clicks with your brain. That you're like, it's 80%, 70% there. It's fine. It's fine. No, I don't think,
when it doesn't work, it's my fault, not the system's fault.
Right. Exactly. I don't think it's going to be 100% because I think that's when we become robots. And I think there's something, you know, to that. But no, man, I truly enjoyed chatting with you, dude. And thanks for sharing all your things. And maybe if you want to kind of wrap it up with letting people know where to find your podcast and, you know, social media and any of the work that you're doing with the data side of things and the ghostwriting side of things and all that.
Yeah, I'd say Twitter is a good entry point for all of it. I know you're big on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So Lewis Shulman on Twitter. Spelling is obviously the same as it is on this episode. My podcast is on Spotify. It's also on YouTube. That's the Lewis and Kyle Show. If you like this podcast, but you're like, man, if only Zlatko would talk more. He was so much smarter than his guests. I do have an episode with Zlatko, so you can listen to him be the star of the show. So check that out. That's a great place to start out with my show. And The businesses are inboxghosts.com or metrics.io. I'm easy to find on the internet. Like, most of the things aren't too competitive in the namespace, so my stuff comes up.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Lewis, thank you so, so much, man. It's always a pleasure chatting, and I'm so glad we actually got to meet in real life. And I've always been talking about, or more recently, I should say, I've been talking about, you know, in real life communities and with like-minded people. And it seems like you're in one way through all your travels and all that, kind of looking for those in maybe a little bit more like spurts where you find that community of people, whether it's running or whatever that might be. I think that's becoming more and more important as we've been all like kind of tied to these screens and, you know, all this shit that happened these past few years with like the pandemic and all that. So I applaud you, man, on all the cool stuff you're doing, all the businesses and everything. And I'm glad you're enjoying yourself. And yeah, man, look forward to chatting again. And thanks for jumping on, dude.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Cheers, brother.
Cheers.